Welcome to the Narrators Podcast. I'm Robert Rutherford.
And I'm Andrew Orvidal. This podcast collects stories that were told at the Narrators, a monthly storytelling event that features people telling true stories based on a theme.
The show takes place on the third Thursday of every month at the Deer Pile in Denver, Colorado.
These stories were recorded live on January 16th, 2014. The theme of the evening was Things I've Forgotten.
Your next storyteller is new to our show, but she is going to run a show here on March 14th called, I believe it's called My Teenage Angst, where people share their high school journals, which would be incredible. That's March 14th in this room, and it's happened in a few other venues around town. Please welcome Megan Nice.
Hi. So I brought a couple things from my journal box, and a journal box is a container where you keep your high school journals. I don't know if anybody else does that, but I do, and I just can't get rid of them because you go back and you read them, and the stories are funny, and that's what My Teenage Angst is all about. So if you have a journal box, come and join me March 14th here. I immediately thought of a story about forgetting things. But when I went digging for that story, I found something else that I thought was pretty good that I wanted to share. This is my kiss list. These are all the boys I ever kissed. No ladies, just boys. And it's very well organized. The middle column, it says man at the top. And we've got first and last names, and in some cases, I didn't know the last name, so it says things like Seth, Beth, stepson, or Larry, Fort Ram, and so it goes on and on like that. And then I actually have their ages. So the ages, all right, I have my age, and then their age in a second column here, because this is important. Because if you kiss somebody who's 3 years older than you, you're cool. Right? Like, my first kiss, I was 11, he was 14. Yeah. It's kind of, I have a daughter now, and I'm like, oh, dear. And then I got a few here where I actually have multiple years, because we stayed together for multiple years. That was exciting. But then over on the left, you'll see I have the column ACT. And so what happened was, at some point, kissing went a little further than kissing, and it became a plus. So it was a kiss plus something else. But I had to go back and give Shane some credit, because while he didn't get a plus, we did a little something, like a boob grab or something, so he got a half a plus. So I had to give him some credit. And then, then eventually I had sex, and that person got a star. But I was in love, so I gave him a heart, too. But then he broke my heart, so I had put a little line down the middle to indicate that he had broken my heart. So on it goes. I go to college. I was in a sorority, so I've got the fraternities from the guys that I made out with and whatnot. And we get to the back, and there's my husband, the last person, which is good because he's here, and it would be really awkward if he wasn't the last person. And so we got married, right? And I didn't want to forget we got married, so I put a little hand on there with a little ring to indicate that I married him. And then we had a baby, and so I put a little rattle on there so I didn't forget that we had a baby. Because I might forget that I have a 5-year-old daughter. I don't know. But anyway, I just wanted to share that. But here's the story. I'm going to read it because it's better to hear it word from word from the page. Whew, I'm shaking so much. Okay, here we go. I'm supposed to pretend like you're all afraid of me. That's the way you're supposed to get through stage fright. Are you all scared of me? Pretend like you are. It helps. Okay, so it's called My First Party, and I wrote it in 1989. It's the original story, so I've had this for 25 years. I'm 40, so I've had it for a while. And it features number 11 on my kiss list, and also the first star. But I have another story about that. This one's different. So this one's called My First Party. It was February 3rd, and the parents were out of town. Dee had a meeting in Idaho, and my dad was in the mountains skiing. My stepsister couldn't get to the house, so I was all alone. The only people invited were close friends such as Sarah, Jeff, Kate, Shelley, and Ian. Around 5 o'clock, Shelley showed up ready to get drunk. Ian came, and then Jeff went out to get our order. Around 9 o'clock, Jeff showed up with our order of liquor. 2 bottles of Mad Dog, a case of beer, and straight vodka. Because I guess there's another kind, I don't know. That was enough to do in a whole army. We transferred up to the dining room and played Thumb Master. I popped in some Metallica, Fade to Black, and the show is on the road. Thumb Master was a fun game. I drank the bottle of Mad Dog and had a mixed drink in front of me. I lost the thumb round and was the new Thumb Master, but first, I had to drink the rest of my vodka and tonic water. I was so drunk I couldn't even taste it. And then I woke up in my sister's bed. So the question is, what happened the rest of the night? I had no clue. Now I believe people when they say they don't remember when they get drunk, and what I learned I didn't like. After I drank the rest of the mixed drink, I could no longer stand. As Shelley and Ian escorted me downstairs, I drooled and fell. I told Shelley I had to pee. She took care of that until I fell off the toilet. Ian had to help her hold me on. They tried to make me sleep, and for 30 minutes I did, and then I had to pee again. And when I arrived at the toilet, I started throwing up all of the night's stuff. Shelley couldn't take the smell, so Ian had to take care of me the rest of the night. I fell over again and barfed all over the floor, Ian and myself. I started to choke on vomit. I could have died if Ian hadn't been there. He saved me. Kate and Shelley changed me, and Ian put me in bed. He wouldn't leave until I fell asleep, and around 1, I finally rested quietly. The next day, I had a big mess to clean up, and the bathroom took days to air out, but my parents never found out. I didn't find out that Sarah and Jeff had had sex until my stepmom found a rubber 2 days later. Cool guys. At least I got out of it. We also lost a bottle of Mad Dog somewhere in the house. I don't know how I'm going to cover that one, Emma. The rest of the school found out what happened, but I don't care, because my pals still like me, and Ian and I are closer than ever. It will be a night that I'll never forget or remember. One thing is, it's now next Friday, and my parents are in Boston for the weekend. Any ideas, anyone? I have some great ones.
That was mega nice. Ron is not only the producer of our podcast, he also produces my sex chat podcast, The Unicorn, if you want to hear that. He's all about that, and pretty much anywhere where anything is recorded in Denver, Ron is somehow involved with it. Please welcome Ron Doyle.
Seven years ago, I maybe sort of stole a bicycle. I'll let you decide. I think I saved it. You know, every apartment complex in Denver has at least one bike rack that people just use to kill their bikes. That's where they lock up their bike and they leave it there to die. And there was this apartment complex, I forget the name of the place, near my buddy Gabe, and it had a horrific bicycle graveyard. And one of the bikes there was unlocked, and it had sat there for over a year. And he told me about this bike. He's like, yeah, it's a really sweet mountain bike, man. You should get it. And I didn't think anything about it because I didn't need any more bikes. I already had 3 bikes in my garage. But my mountain bike had been stolen. And I was teaching high school in Boulder, and I lived in Denver, and I was commuting every day 30 miles on bike and 50 miles by bus. And winter was coming, and I did not want to ride through the ice on a cyclocross skinny tired bike. So I needed something. I needed a mountain bike. I needed girth. And I went, and I checked out the bike, and when I saw it, all these memories flooded back to me because I immediately recognized this bike. It was a 1994 Marin Eldridge Grade. You have no idea what I'm talking about. Just think for me, classic 90s era mountain bike, champagne body, red anodized tips, hardtail, fully... This sounds really sexual. I'm sorry. Hey, well, you know what? It's true. It was. It was the love of my life. When I was 14 years old, I would go into the only bike shop in my hometown, and I would ogle this bike all day long. I knew it in its prime, it was worth $1,000. It was the bike I never got to have. And there it was, just sitting unlocked, with a wheel in the back that was sort of shaped like a taco, so nobody wanted it. And it was there for the taking. And I didn't take it at first because... Fucking bike thieves are the lowest form of human being on the planet, aren't they? They're the, just the worst human beings on the planet. And I was not a bike thief. I refused to do that. So I looked at the bike and I inspected and I found a little sticker. And it was registered with the Telluride Marshal's office. So I said, okay, I'm going to try and find the owner of this bike. And I'm going to become its guardian until I can find its owner. I'm going to take care of it. So I did. I went back. I went home. I called up the Telluride Marshal's office, explained my story, and the marshal was very gracious, and he gave me a name. He said, the guy, the owner, is Adam Markovich. He gave me his last known phone number, which was from, like, 1995. I tried calling it. Disconnected. Big surprise. But then I took it a step further. I spent $15 on one of those little person searches you can do on the internet, and I looked up, and I found a guy, Adam Markovich, who had lived in Telluride and in Boulder and in Denver, and I called every single number on the list, and I even went to a house here in Denver, and I knocked on the door trying to find him. And when I couldn't... Well, okay. Nope, not there. Okay, it's my bike. So I went and I took the bike, and that when I fixed the rear wheel and when I rode on it, I was like, oh, this is it. I had forgotten how much I had loved this bike when I was 14. But the irony was, this bike was made for the 14-year-old me. I didn't fit this bike anymore. It was too small, and I was riding 30 miles a day. So by the end of every day, my back just ached. And I had forgotten how much I'd loved the bike, but I couldn't let go. And really, forgetting is easy, but letting go is really hard. And I had not let go of the fact that I knew this bike didn't really belong to me. And so when I would ride, I had this odd feeling that I was riding in someone else's skin. Jump ahead 9 months. I've left my job as a teacher. I'm now full-time stay-at-home dad, and I'm writing for magazines. And Mountain Bike Magazine asked me to do a story about this bike and about my search for Markovich. I'd named the bike Markovich, and I couldn't get rid of the bike. Like, the bike didn't fit me, and it was just sitting in my garage. I couldn't get rid of it because it's not really mine to sell or give away. It's Adam's bike. So they asked me, start up the search again. Do it again. Let's see what you can do. So I created a website. Back then, the internet seemed a lot more possible. Like, things, you felt like you could really do things with the internet. So I started a blog, and I called up the Telluride Marshal's office again to see if they had any additional information. And I talked to another marshal, and he said, "Well, you know, this registration predates computers, and so let me go and look in the original paper files and see what I can find." And he comes back and he says, "Yeah, no, it's the same guy. It's Adam Markovich." I said, "Excuse me? Markovich, okay. Like without an H on the end?" He's like, "Yeah, Markovic. Oh, okay. So I did it again. I did the search again, and I found some more people, and I started calling, and I'm posting photos on the internet, and I'm like tweeting about it, and I'm posting it on Facebook, and I start getting people coming to me, and they're starting to respond, and I'm getting these little bits of information. I get some guy in Arizona, and he's like, "Well, yeah, my name's Adam, but it's not me." And I found like this church bulletin where somebody had been praying, like a Serbian church where somebody had been praying for Adam. And I was like, "Oh, that's a lead. I'm going to find this guy." And nothing was really happening. And I had to go ahead and work on the story. And right before I had to turn the story into Mountain Bike, I got an email. And I forget the guy's name, and I wish I could remember it. And I forget the college, but this was Adam's fraternity brother. And I wish I could just quote his entire story, but basically he said, "Oh, that Adam, he was a real pussy hound." I scored more secondhand tail off that guy than anyone I've ever. And I was like, this is the Adam? Really? But then he also, in the email, he included a photo, and it was like one of those like fraternity house photos with all the little guys on it. And I found Adam's photo, and he was beautiful. I would have fucked him. I understood when I saw the photo. So I took that photo, I cropped it out, and I put it on the website. And I kept asking questions, and I kept hunting around. And because of this lead of I knew this was the University of Missouri, I went back to the original search, and I found an Adam Markovich in Missouri. And I was like, okay, this is it. I'm going to find it. And I had a radio station in some little small town in Missouri running all day long. There is a writer for Mountain Bike Magazine looking for Adam Markovich. If you're Adam Markovich, please call. This like honey-throated lady at the radio station was like, if you know about a mountain bike that was lost in Denver, blah blah blah, call now. Nothing came of it. I turned in the story and I thought it was over. For folks that don't realize about magazines, they're not timely things. There's a delay. So when you turn in a story for Christmas, you're doing it in July. And this story was about 3 months away from when it was going to come out. And in that 3 months after I had turned in the story, Adam contacted me. He emailed me. And he had said, I am Markovic the man. You found me. And it was really crazy to see all this stuff and to be reminded of my fraternity brother, who was kind of a prick, but, you know, I've got mostly fond memories of him, so it's cool. And I just want to let you know that this bike was stolen from me over 10 years ago in front of the market on Larimer. And because the bike was stolen from me, I got into a car. And I drove, and I was in a car accident that changed the trajectory of my life forever. It's like, whoa! As a writer, I was like, ah, if I've scored the jackpot. He had been drafted into the Serbian army, and he was a sniper. No, that's not at all what happened. He didn't tell me anything. That was where he cut off the story. He wouldn't tell me anymore because he felt so violated. Because I had forgotten the fact that I had made him into a wanted man on the internet. And it was, I mean, imagine if someone was looking for you this way and you found yourself. He was sincerely freaked out and disturbed. So he didn't want to talk to me. He gave me the blessing to keep the bike. And I forgot that that was okay. And I didn't want to let go of this story. So I kept pushing. And I was like, no, man, like, is there any way I could, I have friends in New York, can I come deliver it to you? Because he'd been living in Brooklyn for 10 years. He hadn't been in Denver in 10 years. The bike had been gone that long. And he wouldn't do it. He wouldn't accept the bike. And so then I was stuck. And in the end, I had to give the bike away. I wound up donating it to a program that just takes care of middle schoolers. And it was really hard for me because I'm still obsessed about what the hell was this bike doing for 10 years, man? Like, this bike had a really cool life. And it was then just sitting there on this bike rack, completely forgotten. For me, it's something where I no longer have the bike, but I try to remember what it meant to me. But eventually, I had to let go.
Doyle.
The Narrators Podcast is recorded and produced by the Denver Diatribe. Check out their weekly show at denverdiatribe.com.
The Narrators Podcast is brought to you by these amazing sponsors.
The great guys at Illegal Pete's and Greater Than Records, who in addition to providing rad burritos all over town, provide great local music and comedy.
Check out the appropriately named Sexy Pizza at either of their locations in Capitol Hill or Old South Pearl, or on their website, sexypizzaonline.com.
And finally, by the internet superheroes at Commerce Kitchen, who provide internet marketing solutions and search engine optimization for all your e-commerce needs. Check them out at commercekitchen.com.
For more information about the Narrators and to listen to past episodes, go to thenarratorspodcast.com. Thanks for listening.
Yeah. Womp, womp, womp.